Hello, and welcome to Awakening Into Life, an ongoing podcast series that covers the topics of non-duality, self-realization, and the embodiment of awakening. My name is Bradley, and I am a teacher of non-dual wisdom with a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. And I have devoted my life and my work to helping those who are walking the pathless path, which might include great difficulty and confusion at several stages of the journey. Now, this is the second episode in this podcast series, and today I am introducing the first in a four-part series on the promise, process, and pitfalls of obtaining spiritual enlightenment. This particular talk took place just 1 year after my own initial opening or awakening experience. It was the very first public talk that I ever gave, and it occurred in November of 2015. I was speaking at a New Age, New Thought community, and the talk itself really serves as a good introduction to the kinds of things that I have continued to expound upon all these years. In this talk, I go through the continuum of conscious awareness, and I also speak about five very specific types of spiritual practice that generally tend to culminate or can culminate in realization or deep spiritual awakening. So I'd like to offer this at the very beginning of this podcast series because it really does give you a good idea of what we're going to be talking about as this series continues. So without further ado, please sit back, relax, and enjoy part one of the promise, process, and pitfalls of obtaining spiritual enlightenment. Well, hello.
Hello.
Hello. So tonight's talk, or discussion, or conversation, or however it ends up turning itself out, is on the promise, the process, and the pitfalls of obtaining spiritual enlightenment. And I think the easiest way I can describe enlightenment is to just sit here. Right? When we shed all of the layers of who it is that we think we are, we arrive at just this. We arrive at just this. It's always just this. All things in this universe are love given form to serve a purpose. We ourselves are love given form to serve a purpose, and our purpose is to be love. It is to move through this world with love and kindness, generosity, gratitude, and grace, and to use forgiveness as the mechanism by which we embrace each other, because at the end of the day, we all arise from a singular sea of conscious awareness. We are all one as consciousness, energy, and matter. It is the confusion of the conditioned mind that prevents us from experiencing this fundamental reality for ourselves. When we are born into this world as babies, we are born with a clean slate, a clear mind. It is the first time that a parent says to us, "This is your foot, this is your nose, this is a bowl, this is a kite, this is right, and this is wrong." That is the moment at which our conditioning begins. It continues with family and friends, with school and work, with television and media. Every social interaction that we engage in over the course of our lives adds another layer of conditioning. Eventually, all of these layers give rise to the egoic manifestation of an I am that is not. We begin to believe that we are someone who must be doing something, and in this, we find ourselves lost. What is enlightenment? It is clearing the mind, opening the heart, and returning to our true nature as beings of infinite love, recognizing our purpose as love. When we strip away all of the conditioning, that's all that's left, because that's all that we ever were to begin with. I often say that enlightenment is both everything and nothing at the very same time. It is everything because the moment you experience it, it changes everything. And it's nothing because the moment you experience it, you realize that you were always in, and that it was just you getting in your own way the whole time. And it's very difficult for people to understand this continuum of conscious awareness that exists. It isn't that we are necessarily lost, because we're not. We're all just playing our part the way we're meant to, within the perfection of the harmony of motion that we're just a note in. But we often seem to get caught up in the idea of ego, right? That conditioned I am that is not. And what I hear a lot of, and when I started to go through my own awakening, and I started to really dig into the ego to try to understand what is this thing called ego, I began to see a lot of spiritual traditions that were talking about how we needed to fight the ego, work with the ego, dismiss the ego, all of these things that were about the ego, as if this ego were something separate. As if this ego was something that was bad, and problematic, and was something we were lost in. And although our conditioning gives rise to someone, to us thinking that we're someone, who it is we think we are is perfect. This is something a lot of people struggle with, because ultimately what enlightenment really and truly leads to at the end of the journey, not at the end, because it's always continuing, but when you go to the lowest levels, to the highest levels of realization, it is to see the perfect harmony of motion play itself out in everything, including the fact that there's an ego, including the fact that there's terror and horror and evil in the world. All of it is perfect because it's not about you or me as separate individuals. It's about the whole system moving in the direction of love. The whole system. Not just me or you, who thinks we're me and you. I can get into a lot of great dialogue about what enlightenment is and go through all these different stages and levels of conversation and ways of pointing at it. But ultimately, I like to talk about these five things that help people see the truth for themselves, because that's really what it's about. None of it is about how enlightened am I. It is a question of where are each and every one of us on the continuum of conscious awareness. This is something that I use as a model to kind of describe where each one of us are. And it doesn't matter, because we're all enlightened. We're all enlightened. It's just a question of how much of your own enlightenment have you realized so far. So at the beginning of this continuum are the sleepers, the people who are just playing their part. They're just playing their part. They have no interest in spirituality. They have no interest in moving into anything else. They're just doing what they do. Doing what they do. And they do it so beautifully. They're so lost in their role, they're playing it to perfection. Those are the people that you run into and that you just, you know, they make your life miserable. But that's their job. That's what they're there to do. Because they exist to take you deeper. They exist to move you deeper into yourself, to learn to forgive and to let go and to accept, to develop kindness and compassion and patience. That's what they exist for. Those people who are sleeping, they're playing the most difficult role, the most challenging role. They're playing the role that has no thank you attached to it. They're busy being the bad guy so you can learn how to be the good guy. So those people who are out there who are the ones making our lives miserable, they're the ones that we should love the most. So sleeping. And then seeking, right? Seeking. That next layer of the next stage in the continuum of conscious awareness, where you know there's something not quite right about all of this. You don't know what it is exactly, but you know you need to figure it out. There's something in you that is pushing you into something else that isn't this, because this isn't working. This isn't working. So we dig, we start looking into all these different traditions and belief systems, and we sign ourselves up for a religion, or we sign ourselves up for whatever. We go and we look out there for an answer. That's seeking. We're seeking something outside of ourselves that can help fill that void that we're carrying around with us everywhere. We don't know how to fill it, but we know it must be out there somewhere. So we're seeking. And then we have awakening. Awakening. That moment at which, however we get there, we have that moment of direct contact with consciousness itself. And I often use the words God and consciousness and love and awareness and all these different terms interchangeably. And I'll talk a little bit about that more later. But they are all interchangeable because they're all the same thing. Awakening is that moment at which you touch God. Not here, but here. Where you stop seeing the world through your myopic view of just me, just here, and it expands. Consciousness expands within you. And you reach into your own divinity. You see the divine spark within yourself. Now, for many of us, for myself included, that is a moment of absolute terror. What is this? What is this? Oh my goodness. So that's awakening. Awakening is that moment of you've been seeking and now you have found, and oh boy, it's just the beginning. Awakening is just the beginning. Then we have deepening. Deepening into the awakened experience. Deepening into the awakened mind. Beginning to practice all of those things that while we were seeking, we read all this stuff. Now that we've awakened, we go, uh-oh, now I understand what all this stuff is about. And in deepening, you go, I actually have to practice this stuff. There's no other way. There's no other way through the door. There just isn't. I can't find an answer out there because there isn't one. The only answer is in here. And the only way to get to the answer is to dig in here, to do the work, to do the work. The last stage is ceasing. This is that beautiful place where it's just this. That spaciousness beyond the mind is stepped into, and we stop asking ourselves questions. We stop telling ourselves stories. We simply cease being someone, and we are everyone and everything. And we don't need to tell ourselves stories about any of it because it's just this. From one beautiful unfolding moment into the next, it's just this, whatever this may contain. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It's all beautiful. It's all perfect. It's all exactly as it is supposed to be, and there is no error anywhere. There are no mistakes. There are no errors. There's none of that. It's all perfect. If you can believe that God has the whole universe in the palm of his hand, how can it be anything other than perfect? That's ceasing. It's just this. And there's nothing left up here. There's no more I am that is not. Now you are just the I am that is. And every single aspect of our existence is tied into the I am that is. That's ceasing. Just living in that spaciousness. It's a beautiful place to be. Last weekend, one of the gentlemen here gave a talk and was saying, what would it be like to live without guilt and shame? And I can tell you the beauty of living without guilt and shame is to be able to be witness to the perfection of absolutely everything. Not using it as a get-out-of-jail-free card or as a license to act like an asshole, right? But to be able to acknowledge that I,
within my experience of consciousness, am moving all things in the direction of love and kindness. And while certain things may not appear to be moving in the direction, it wasn't a mistake. I needed to slip into a different role to fulfill my purpose in this moment. And I forgot myself for a moment, or so it seems, but that's not real. What's real is what is happening, not what we think about what is happening. And so that's ceasing, when we stop telling ourselves all these stories. Now, how we deepen or how we move through these different levels of conscious awareness that exist on this continuum, because there are lots more layers of subtlety, those are kind of my five to make it easy. It's just a model. Anytime we use words, concepts, and ideas to try to explain things, we lose whatever it is we're trying to explain. That's the beautiful thing. That's one of the most challenging things about what enlightenment really is. Because as soon as you try to use words to explain it, you lose it. It's just gone. Enlightenment itself isn't even really a thing. It's just a word that we connect ourselves to as something we're working towards until we find it, at which point we realize it never existed. It only exists as something for people who are still looking for it. So these five things that I talk about, so we can find it for ourselves, or wherever we are, we can deepen into it ourselves. We can get to that place. We can get to that place where we experientially see within our heart the divine perfection of all things, and we are no longer lost in stories. We just exist within the greater harmony of motion. We see ourselves as a singular note in that harmony, and we sing as brightly as we can. We become the flame that shines so brightly that it cannot be ignored. And we just are love. There's no more doing, there's just being. And in that being, you are love. You are the divine expression of love that every single one of us has the potential to shine forth in this lifetime. Every single one of us has the ability to reach into that place and to become it completely, completely. So these five things, and I'll talk about them a little bit more in depth. To learn to love and trust ourselves and honor our own journey. To practice mindfulness and meditation. To face and let go of our pain. To pay attention to synchronicity and to be wary of our traps. Now I can say there are lots of ways to reach this place, lots of different ways to reach this place, and you should try on, they're all hats, and you should try on as many hats as you can and look at yourself in the mirror every time you put on a new hat and ask yourself, does this one fit? How does this look? Let me try this for a little while. Lots of different ways to get there. One of the simplest ways, and this is a way that's taught in many of the Hindu traditions, is just, where is the I am? Where is the I am? I am angry, I am sad, I don't understand this. Who? Point. Show me where is the I am that is having that experience. Show me. It's just here. It's just thought. Okay, what's your evidence that that thought is real? Oh, another thought. Oh, now we're on a slippery slope, aren't we? Using thought to justify thought. Using thought to explain thought. So learning to love and trust ourselves and honor our own journey. This is the most important step. Most of us don't love ourselves, not in any real meaningful way. We are attached to our concept of self. We cling to the idea of who it is we think we are. And so long as we're clinging to the idea, we cannot set ourselves free. And the only way to let go of that idea is to love yourself enough to be willing to let it go. Because you don't need it anymore. Once you learn to love yourself completely, completely, you don't have to hold on to that. There's nothing left to cling to because it's just love. The more and more you learn to love yourself and you practice all of these other things at the same time, the more and more you begin to see that you are love. The more and more you begin to see that you are everyone and you are everything, and the more and more you begin to love everyone and everything. It just becomes you because you're it. Learning to love yourself isn't about, wow, look at how great I am. It's about treating yourself with love and kindness. It's about becoming your own best friend. It's about learning to accept your worthiness of your own love, of God's love, and of the love of others. Knowing that it's meant for you, that it's here for you, that it's yours, that it's already there. You don't have to go anywhere to find it. You just have to move inward. You just have to invite the experience of love into your experience of life. We have to learn to trust ourselves, because if we don't trust in the direction of our lives, we're not going to go anywhere. As we learn to love ourselves, we begin to trust ourselves. We begin to say, well, you know what? I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. We start stepping out of fear. And we begin to have trust in ourselves at first. Eventually, that trust becomes faith. Not trust or faith in ourselves so much as trust and faith in the divine perfection of all things as they are. To know that we're always exactly where we're supposed to be, doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing, and there's no error in any of it. To be in that place, to trust that. I'll talk a little bit about synchronicity and how that is a wonderful way to show you. To show you. And we have to honor our own journey, because in this world, many of us are taught through conditioning, through the nature of society and the way stories are passed down and the ways we're told that we're supposed to be. We are normalized and socialized into different systems of belief. And these can be the belief that you're a Christian or a Buddhist. They can be the belief that you're a white man or a black man. They can be the belief that you're a woman or you're all of that, right? You're conditioned into some level of normalized or socialized acceptance of what that is for this culture, for this culture. But none of that's real. The more and more you love yourself and you trust yourself, the deeper you go, the more crazy you're going to become by all standard definitions of what people accept as normal. Why are you so loving? Well, I don't know. Because I am. And they're going to go, that's just wrong. That's just nuts. You know, we had this whole thing, right? This whole thing happened in Paris. And everyone that I see on my Facebook from my old life, my old family, my old world, is let's bomb those bastards back to the Stone Age. And wow. My response to that is, what a wonderful opportunity to practice forgiveness. Where you see suffering, I see a doorway to love. And of course, the response to that was, you know what the hell you're talking about? You're crazy. We need to bomb those bastards. All right, well, I'm not going to argue. It's not my job to try to take away someone else's belief. Either you want to see the truth for what the truth really is, or you don't. That's up to you. That's part of your journey. And you have to trust and you have to honor your journey. Each and every one of us has our own journey to take. There are some 7.3 billion people on this planet right now, and therefore there are 7.3 billion journeys. And if we try to take the journey of another, we will find ourselves lost. It's all in here. All of it. Every answer that we need is right here. It's not following someone else. Sometimes we need someone else to help open our eyes. But unless that person says, open them inward, you're following the wrong person. So that's the first thing. Learn to love and trust ourselves and to honor our own journey. The second one is to practice mindfulness and meditation. A wonderful thing. Mindfulness is being the observer of your own experience from one moment to the next. Just being fully present in the experience. Not using words and concepts and ideas to try to narrate the experience, or to try to explain to ourselves what everything is, but rather to just be fully present in it. Now, there's a point at which you realize that there is not even a doing occurring. There's not even a doing occurring. But that's a much different place, and you have to go through all these other layers to get to that place. There's nothing happening. You're washing the dishes. Wonderful. You think you're washing the dishes. You're not really washing the dishes. You're communing with love. You're flowing within the greater harmony of motion. You're just part of the whole process, unfolding, moving. You're part of the movement. But while you're doing dishes, pay attention to doing dishes. Because that is all there is happening right there in that space. Not, I'm doing the dishes and thinking about bills. I'm doing the dishes and thinking about that horrible conversation that went so wrong during dinner. I'm thinking about tomorrow and all the things I'm going to have to do for work. It's just doing the dishes. How warm is the water? How do the bubbles feel? What is the sound that's made? What does the air smell like? To just be present. Not to say it's hot, but to go, oh, just this. Again, that's where we get just this. Mindfulness is that tool by which we just continue to develop the observer. We develop the witness. We learn how to attune ourselves to the beingness beyond our being of which we are all a part. Mindfulness is the tool that brings us back to ourselves over and over and over again. There's this wonderful thing in neuroscience called neuroplasticity, which I'm sure many of us are aware of. It says that you can reshape the mind. Neurons that fire together wire together. That's the old belief system, right? And it's absolutely true. But you can alter the mind at any point in time. And mindfulness is a tool by which we can make this happen. The whole thing is about teaching. The whole thing is about training. The whole thing is about practice. What you're practicing is just letting go of thought. You're letting go of fear. It's interesting because first of all, you're sitting in this place where you don't know what anything is, but you know what everything is. You're just kind of like, I'm going to tell myself all these stories about everything. I know best. I am this person chock full of opinions, and I have an opinion about everything, and I'm going to assign all these values to everything I see. Wonderful. You and everybody else. And then we're going to argue with each other over who's right and who's wrong when none of us know what the hell we're talking about. And then we get to this place where it's, oh, look, fear, uncertainty, doubt, fear, uncertainty, doubt, fear, uncertainty, doubt, joy, happiness, wonder, awe. And we go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Mindfulness is the mechanism by which we can create spaciousness within our own mind to hold all of the things that are occurring within the mind in a way that allows us to watch them, but not react to them. To not get lost in them. When we get lost in a story, we become that story. And it doesn't matter what the story is. The story can be about a horrible thing that happened, or it can be about a beautiful thing that happened. It's still a story. Most of us get locked into this idea of, I have to practice with all of the bad stuff, mindfulness and meditation. I got to use that as a tool, practice all the bad stuff. No, you have to do it with the good stuff too. Because it's all temporary. It's all ephemeral. It's all changing. It's all fleeting. There is no permanence in any of it. And if we hold on to joy and happiness and those things that bring us those sensations, and we say, I'm going to follow that, I'm going to chase that, what happens when they're gone? Now we're back on the other side of the spectrum. You have to work with all of it to hold it all in balance. All of it in balance. Mindfulness is that tool by which we can do that. And it's just practice, practice, practice. Look where I am now. Look where I am now. Coming back over and over and over again. Meditation is a tool that allows us to practice mindfulness at deeper layers of subtlety. And there are many different ways of meditation. Many different ways. I will close with one that I call the heart breath, because ultimately that is where our answers are found, in the heart. Certain types of meditation are more useful than others. It simply is the case. We are taught many different forms of meditation. Many of the forms of meditation that are taught today are about being more comfortable in the illusion. And if you want to be more comfortable in the illusion, then wonderful. I myself had focused for quite a while on extracting myself from the illusion. The illusion of all of this being something. A good way to explain the nature of it is, again, using words, concepts, and ideas to try to label everything and to tell ourselves what everything is. But if we take a chair, a chair only has the value of chairness because that's what we've assigned it. We've been conditioned to see a chair as a chair, and we know what a chair is for. You sit in it. It's all a chair is for. But if you sit in front of it, can you not use it as a table? If you stand on it, can you not use it as a ladder? If you throw it in the air, could you not make a small child laugh? Could you put one on top of another and call it art? What if you melt the chair down entirely? Is it still a chair? It's love given form to serve a purpose, and we with our conditioned minds are the ones busy ascribing or assigning purpose. It's just love. Look. And that is the nature of the illusion. It's what we look at and what we see and how we label the world out there with our minds. When you can stop doing that and just see everything as one continuous flow, that's what I talk about when I say it's just this. It's just this. I don't look at this room and say there are chairs and lights and people. And it's all one flowing movement. And it's all love. It's the dynamic harmony of perfection. Meditation allows us to go there in deeper and deeper ways. And there are deeper and deeper kinds of meditation. And not all meditations are created equal. Again, if you want to be more comfortable in the illusion and you want to sit and stare at a light and go, that is a light, I am a person, that is a light, I am a person. Great, you're reinforcing the division between you and the light. Become the light. You are the light. Breaking down the separation and division, that's where the answers are.
Thank you all for taking the time to listen to this second episode in my podcast series on non-duality, self-realization, and embodied awakening. I hope it was helpful in some small way, and I invite you to continue listening for the next part in this four-part series on the promise, process, and pitfalls of obtaining spiritual enlightenment. And if you liked what you heard here, please feel free to visit the website at awakeningintolife.com. There you will find additional information on my own history and background, on the services that I provide, and additional information about this process of awakening. Thank you, everyone. Take care and be well.